Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Daily Podcast is proud to be in partnership with Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Whether your business needs cars, vans, or larger commercial vehicles, you can rent from the best lineup in the UK with Enterprise. And with flexible long-term rental, you can get vehicles for as long as you need them, from minutes to months. Whatever the mission, Enterprise's mobility experts can build a bespoke solution to suit your business needs. Visit enterprise.co.uk/business to find out more.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to the first Andy Goldstein TalkSport Daily Podcast of the week with me, your host, Andy Goldstein. And of course, we begin with more tributes to Her Majesty the Queen, who passed away on Thursday. Last night on TalkSport, we brought you a special documentary focusing on the importance of the Queen at the 1966 World Cup. Here's just a little snippet of that, narrated by the legendary sports commentator Barry Davis.
The first football match the Queen attended was the 1953 FA Cup final, just a month before her coronation. It became known as the Matthews final, as the legendary winger Stanley Matthews, at the ripe age of 38, inspired his Blackpool team to a 4-3 comeback victory over Bolton Wanderers.
There's the man who's really fighting for his cup medal. Could he score the winning goal now, himself? It's there! And where's Stanley Matthews? There's Joe Smith running on to him. There's Stanley. At long last, he's done it. And everybody cheering him.
TalkSport's royal correspondent, Rupert Bell, spoke about the importance of Her Majesty's presence on that day.
It is and was always the biggest sporting event in the country. It mattered, and you can see from all the newsreels just how significant the FA Cup final was in the British sporting psyche of the time. So the final for the Queen was a big shop window.
The 11th of July 1966 was an incredibly special moment for this nation as Her Majesty opened the World Cup ceremony at Wembley Stadium.
I am very pleased that this country is acting as host for the final phases of the World Cup. I welcome all our visitors and feel sure that we shall be seeing some fine football. It now gives me great pleasure to declare open the 8th World Football Championships.
There she was, and it was all in black and white, by the way, and no colour telly. So it was then, and she said in her normal clipped reserve tones, we are pleased to be the hosts and we're expecting to see some fine football. That was the young Queen saying that, and we went, that'll do, let's get on with the game. As it happened, the opening game, a goalless draw was Uruguay, wasn't that great. But she was there, and which was the main thing.
As Bobby Moore climbed the steps to collect a trophy that England had never won, everybody could see that he was wiping his hands on his to make sure that his hands would be as clean as possible after a match which had been played in pretty miserable weather at times.
Her Majesty the Queen, Bobby Moore, comes up to receive the Jules Rimet Trophy for England. Only 12 inches high, solid gold, and it means England are the world champions.
There is the late World Cup winning captain describing that moment.
When I just approached the top of the stairs and come around the corner for the first time, all I could visualise was the Queen in shining white gloves. You know, and we'd been playing on a very, very wet pitch, and all I could think of is dirty, wet, muddy hands. I can't possibly shake hands with her like this. And the first thing I could think of was to clean my hands, and which I did on top of a lovely laid-out velvet just prior to meeting her. You know, I suppose it might have been a silly thing to do, you know, to many, many people, but it was just an immediate reaction was that, my goodness me, those lovely white gloves, I can't dirty them.
But in those days, you know, again, you didn't expect the Queen to make a sort of long speech or something. The fact that she was handing it over and you get a fantastic photograph and it was all seen on television, of course, you know, would have been considered to be a very, very high honour indeed.
It gets a feel for what the country's thinking about, because if there's sporting success, then it does definitely elevate the mood. And of course, as the head of state, that all helps, you know, her and gives her something to understand what's going on in the country.
And you can listen to Her Majesty and 66, a special TalkSport documentary now available on the TalkSport Daily podcast feed, where you found this podcast.
Eldar Eldarov and David Egan are staying on the best, and it's going to be a first classic for David Egan as Eldar Eldarov wins the Ledger, another one for Roger Varian.
And thanks to our friends at Sky Sports Racing for the commentary there, as you heard David Egan winning his first classic. A bit of a surprise result, Rupert.
Not at 9-2, no, not entirely.
Winning the classic, all them other races were fantastic out in the Middle East, but an English classic is something special.
Here's how it all sounded, with the reaction from TalkSport's Rupert Bell and TV presenter Ed Chamberlain.
It was an extraordinary day. It really was. Today was all about the racing, having a fitting tribute to Her Majesty the Queen. Because no offence to the other sports who've had decisions to make this weekend, Alex, but racing had to get it right. It had to get it right because she was our patron. Racing was her sport.
David Egan is one of the rising stars of the weighing room, son of John Egan. He's won big races around the world. He's a hugely talented jockey, and he proved it to good effect there. And a terrific performance, winning actually quite comfortably in the end.
It felt right, and sport unites people like no other. And there was very much a respectful, slightly sombre atmosphere. But I think people enjoyed having the chance to pay their tribute. There was plenty of emotion, but also people wanting to say thank you. I'm not sure celebrate's the right word, but maybe recognise the most incredible life that Her Majesty the Queen had.
You know, I suppose racegoers were turning up just like as I heard you talking to John, not quite sure what the mood was going to be like, but very respectful. And that all sort of encapsulated the mood. But now just looking at what's coming from Donks, you get the feeling that it's sort of business as usual, just as the Queen would want.
Racing has a major challenge moving forward because she has been our ambassador globally. She is the single most important figure in the world of racing, not just in this country. And for Royal Ascot, you know, she is the heartbeat of Royal Ascot. What does Royal Ascot do? We've been so fortunate to have her as our biggest supporter and biggest fan for so long. And we probably only won't appreciate it in the next few years, Alex. Now she's gone so sadly. We won't really appreciate just the effect she had and the way she took racing to parts of the world and with race names after her from every country, you know, from Japan to Australia.
All in all, I think racing and Doncaster, more importantly, have done the sport proud.
Legendary jockey Frankie Dettori finished second behind the winner, Eldar Eldarov, ridden by David Egan. Before the race, he joined Natalie Sawyer and Tony Cascarino to pay his own tribute to the Queen.
It's a very sombre mood, feeling of emptiness, you know. I know the Majesty for 30 years, and, you know, she always said the horror of immortality, and when it actually does happen, he's a complete shock. You know, when the news comes out, you know, it really takes a chunk of your soul away a little bit, and... You know, racing was a sport. What that's what she loved. You know, I've been to Buckingham Palace, Windsor Castle. I met the Queen all over the place, and she was always attracted to people in racing. You know, she always made a detour and went straight to the people what were involved in those races. So she meant a lot for my sport, and you could see the real love and the passion in her face every time she came racing.
Frankie, I've got to ask you this because your famous dismount, and you know, every time you had a winner, and I always wondered, I wonder if the Queen ever said anything to Frankie Dettori, say, I love this, or maybe not so much.
Well, in fairness, she never did, but she always had a smile on her face, and yeah, I mean, she had a great sense of humor. I remember years back, I won my fourth King George, and she gave me the trophy. And she asked me about the race, and I said, oh, Your Majesty's, you know, today is my fourth King George. And she looked back at me, she said, well, Leicester won 7, so get back in your box.
Oh, that took it away from you for a moment.
Yeah.
you talked there about that. It was obviously a private moment that you shared with her, but in a public setting, and you said that you've been to Buckingham Palace. I don't know if you're able to share personal stories that you feel you could share with us, because you have been in a position so many of us have not been able to have been in, to have been in those private moments with the Queen.
Well, funny enough, one year I lost my little dog, went out hunting in the field, and the Queen's manager found it on the street, and she had a collar with my phone number, so I was contacted. And he said to me, listen, the Queen is coming to Newmarket to watch her horses gallop in the morning. So if you come at 7 o'clock, you can say hello to the Queen and pick up the dog. So I said to my little daughter, my daughter was 10. I said, listen, put a little dress and we're going to go and get the dog from the Queen. She said, shut up, Dad. That'd be silly. I said, no, it's true. So we went to this secret location and I walked in and there she was. She was by the fireplace having a gin and tonic. I was offered a drink, so I had a gin and tonic myself. And then she had a long conversation with my daughter for 1.5 hours about ponies, about a school. And that was that. You know, she was very, very relaxed to talk to, and she made my daughter feel very welcome. And that's the sort of person that she was. You know, I'll be honest with you, I met her for 30 years, and even through the last days that I met her, I always felt that feeling of anxiety or didn't know how to act in front of her, but she always made you feel welcome, you know. But you know, it's always, you know, she had this horror about her, you know. She made you feel happy, and she, you know, you always excited to see her.
Moving on now to football, and the new Chelsea boss Graham Potter has admitted to Brighton fans in an open letter that he doesn't expect them to forgive his departure, and they will find it hard to accept. Shortly we'll hear from Chelsea defender Scott Minto and goalkeeping coach David Preece, who worked for one of Potter's former clubs, and Darren Bent. But first, here's the former England defender Danny Mills, who believes he couldn't say no to this opportunity.
I think it's a move that he can't turn down without being disrespectful to Brighton. It's a huge step up. These opportunities don't come around very often.
I think it's a brilliant, brilliant appointment. I do hope that he gets the time, the energy, the investment, the patience, the buy-in from everybody to produce the football that he has produced at Brighton and Hove Albion.
I like the football that he plays. I think there's a real identity to the way his football plays. And I said everything about him, his demeanour, the way he talks to his players, there seems to be a respect there. Well, first and foremost, I think he's a top quality coach, so I think he'll do really well at Chelsea.
I don't want people to get away from it, the fact that he's a very adaptable coach, and that's how he produces players, that's how he educates players. He doesn't want them just to play one way. He very much wants them to be able to adapt to any scenario, and he generally does that.
It's brilliant for the young coaches that have done their badges across the country to believe that actually, do you know what, if Graham Potter can be the manager of Chelsea Football Club, then, you know, anyone who's doing their studying their badges now can achieve anything.
The question marks are out there. Can he do it at a massive football club? But I am convinced that he can do.
Can he deal with the big egos? My guess would be that he can. It is a risk, but it's a calculated risk.
A lot of people would ask that question, that he hasn't obviously won anything at the top level, but everyone's got to start somewhere. Do you know what I mean? Everyone's got to be given this opportunity. And I think by him being given this opportunity, I think he'll grab it with both hands, and I fully expect him to do really well.
Potter, I think, ticks pretty much every box.
He's got to be careful. There are some very, very big egos within that, but he's going to have to leave out some big players. And when he does that, their reaction is going to be key. And that's the only thing difficulty I think he's going to have to manage.
Because the way that he is, that he comes across very, very measured in everything that he says, people mistake that you know, that he doesn't have the steel to cope with those big personalities. Well, he couldn't have anything further from the truth.
He's not experienced this before in terms of Chelsea now is one of the biggest clubs in the world.
The gradual progression he's made, you don't get to the level where he's at now if you don't have that steel and determination and the ability to handle those difficult decisions.
I think clubs now don't care necessarily about nationality, but Graham Potter has shown enough to potential to say to Todd Bowley that actually you can manage a top four club, and not just a top four club, but a club that should be fighting for all the trophies.
I didn't expect it. When it first happened, that wasn't the first name I thought of.
I think if he can win something, go deep in the Champions League and they finish in the top four, I think that'd be a successful season for him.
On now to cricket. And England are in a dominant position after day four of the third and final test against South Africa at the Oval. Here's reaction from some of the players involved and the former England fast bowler Steve Harmison on the Following On podcast.
Cricket really does not do itself any favours whatsoever. The players shouldn't have come off last night. Fast forward 24 hours with England needing 33 runs to win, 10 wickets in hand, two batters who would be quite happy to have stayed there, 11 fielders who equally so know the game is up and they'll be quite happy to stay there as well. The umpires had to take the players from the field. So, yep, we will come back tomorrow, but they have robbed the paying fan the chance to really cap off what has been a wonderful 2 days for English cricket. They would have chased down the target if given the opportunity, but they haven't been given it. They've walked off. Crawley with 50 to his name, Leeds with 32. We'll come back tomorrow to watch England win the game and take the series.
Actually, it might fit this series if we come back in front of nobody tomorrow and finish the series. It ain't been very good, to be fair.
They could have continued. They really could have done. I mean, come on, it's ridiculous. Cricket does this so often. I don't know another sport that shoots itself in its own feet quite so regularly as cricket does.
The standard of bowling in this series has been fantastic. The standard of discipline from the batting has been woeful.
There was disappointment, there were boos, as you can imagine, but also a sense of resignation because Test cricket fans have been here before.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This episode of the TalkSport Daily is brought to you by Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Planning to hire or share a car or van? Enterprise is there every step of the way. Whenever and wherever you need a vehicle and whatever it's for, Enterprise can help. With over 450 locations across the UK, they're just around the corner. Whether you need a weekend rental, a holiday hire, a replacement car, or you're planning a business trip, home or away, Enterprise are there to help. To find out more and book, visit enterprise.co.uk.
And we end the podcast with some golf as the BMW PGA Championship came to an end at Wentworth. Here's TalkSport's Russell Hargreaves with all the details from a nail-biting finish in Surrey.
And it is Shane Lowry who is the 2022 PGA Champion here at Wentworth.
I'm obviously pretty happy. I was going out there today just giving it my best shot like I do every day, and you know, you don't know what you're going to get, so I'm so happy that I'm sitting here with the trophy.
First Irishman to win this great tournament for 64 years, his 13th time of trying, a 6th DP World Tour victory, and his second at Rolex Series level as well. Absolutely superb stuff.
You've got like some of the best players in the world trying to chase you down, and I felt that today, but I felt like my game has been good enough all year to win, and I just felt like I haven't had the breaks that I needed to win tournaments, and you know, I'm just very thankful and very grateful that I got to win this. Like, you know, what a tournament to win as well.
Lowry's final round of 65, good enough to win by one from the rest of the field. Didn't quite eagle the last, but his birdie proved to be enough. And down the stretch, upping his game quite brilliantly to beat a stellar field. So Lowry wins it at 17 under par. Rahm and McIlroy at minus 16. Taylor Gooch and Patrick Reed, two of the LIV fraternity, finishing fourth and fifth respectively. Reed alongside the Belgian Thomas Detry.
Everyone knows how I feel. And yeah, certainly that was a bit of extra motivation going out today. I saw a few lads making a bit of a run, and felt like I was going to do my best to make sure that one of us won, and I was hoping it was obviously going to be me, so yeah.
A remarkable day, all played out, of course, amid the backdrop, the tragedy of Thursday and the death of Her Majesty. The golf carried on, and I think with this kind of finale, it really was a fitting tribute. Well done, Shane Lowry. He is the PGA champion.
Well, that's it for another podcasty thingamajig. Thanks for listening on the TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcast from. Make sure, of course, you hit that subscribe button. I'm back this afternoon at 4 p.m. on Andy Goldstein's Drive Time Show alongside former England striker Darren Bent. There will, of course, be another one of these Andy Goldstein TalkSport Daily podcasts out first in the morning. So do what you have to do to get it. Until then, thanks for listening. Have a good day. And above all, be safe, everyone. Be safe.
The TalkSport Daily podcast is proud to be in partnership with Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Whatever your mission, home or away, don't delay. Enterprise has the vehicle for the job. Rent from the best lineup in the UK. With over 450 branches, Enterprise has what your business needs. From compact three-door cars to spacious SUVs and people carriers to vans, they offer a large range of reliable vehicles perfect for the job. To find out more and book, visit enterprise.co.uk.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here.
I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.